Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola and very excited to be joined on what's gonna be a day of just good vibes and news. You know, nothing bad or corrosive to democracy or our society or views or expectations for our fellow humans, nothing like that. And contributing to the good vibes, Yasmin Aliyah Khan returns. Yasmin, how's it going?
Hi, John. Hi, everyone. I'm very excited to be here. I am here for all the vibes too. Yeah, let's talk about some good old fashioned democracy and Americanism. Ready. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're going to talk about things that are perhaps even more core to America. Racism, yeah. But even more so denying that it exists. Those are two of the legs that our country stands on. So that's going to be fun. Obviously, throughout the course of this next hour, we're going to be giving you a little bit of updates on what happened in and around Atlanta, including some of the new figures that have added the cast in that that have been added to the cast in that story. We're going to check in on my prediction yesterday, which I'll go over when we get to it. Will conservatives take the vaccine? And we've got some new evidence. That'll be fun. And then a bunch of other generally awful stuff, but we'll try to make it both informative and entertaining. So we've got that going for us. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here. Regardless of where you're watching, if you could hit the like button or the like button equivalent, that would be great. And you can share the stream, let people know that we're active. And while we're doing this, if you want to send us messages, along the way, comments, questions, anything, that would be awesome. By the way, speaking of questions, after the show, not long after the show, we're going to be doing our third monthly Q&A for our Tier 3 YouTube members. So that is available if you're a Tier 3 member. If you'd like to become one before that, we will be going live. You'll get information on how to join it right beforehand. And we'll just talk back and forth for a bit, you know, maybe about politics, maybe about other stuff, whatever you want. So that should be a lot of fun. The last two were great. So looking forward to more of that. And with that, Yasmin. Ready to do this thing?
Oh yeah, I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Okay, I like that. It's confidence. Yeah. Okay, let's do this then. The morning after the terrible shootings in and around Atlanta, the police had a press conference. And on top of all of the terrible stuff that had been going on and that utter tragedy, to add on to it, the spokesperson for the police talked about the motivations of the shooter, talked about the shooter in a way that seemed incredibly bizarre at the time. And we're learning a bit more about why that might have happened. But just in case you didn't see that, here's a bit of what happened yesterday morning.
With investigators, they interviewed him this morning and they got that impression that yes, he understood the gravity of it. And he was pretty much fed up and kind of at the end of his rope. And yesterday was a really bad day for him and this is what he did.
Okay, so there was all this stuff where he seemed to just be taking the shooter at his word and seemed to be trying to make the case that the defense is supposed to make eventually. All of it seemed really weird, Yasmin. What did you think as that was unfolding yesterday?
Whenever there's something like a mass shooting that happens, especially whenever there's a group that's obviously being targeted, in this case, it was Asian women. It's almost like the narrative is kind of boring, very predictable, very much like, oh, we already know what's going to happen, what they're going to say, what's not going to happen as far as justice being served or the families getting any kind of retribution or even acknowledgement that, you know, these are race related issues. But this one was fun because it was different. You know, I don't want to say fun in the sense that any of this is a laughing matter, but it's just like, what the things that they come up with are just kind of mind blowing. This one was new. You know, he was just having a bad day. You know, he had to eliminate a certain threat, a threat that was only a threat to him, you know, a threat that maybe society had given him, a threat that, you know, our former president definitely, definitely helped instigate. But he was just having a bad day, and that's how he chose to react to it. It's very strange. But I don't think any of if I have a bad day, I'm not even allowed to like look at somebody differently without my mother calling me out on it, you know? So whatever.
Exactly. So all of that was incredibly weird. Why they would have chosen this individual, why this individual would have talked about it in that way. But very soon after that, we started to learn a little bit more, and we speculated a bit on the show yesterday about why this person would be talking in this way. Well, it turned out that that individual, Jay Baker, had previously in April of last year shared a post, I believe on Facebook, saying, "Love my shirt, get yours while they last." And there were images of the shirts. and they had a biohazard symbol, and it said COVID-19 imported virus from China. So not only is it xenophobic, but it is specifically trying to mimic the way Trump talks about it, not just, you know, focusing on China, but specifically how he pronounces it. So he loves his shirt that is demonizing China and lauding Trump's demonization of China. And then not quite 1 year later, that individual gets to be the first point of contact for the cops on whether race had anything to do with this. So the guy who thinks joking about China giving us COVID gets to evaluate whether the guy who's probably been influenced by that narrative for a year was motivated by racism when he decided to kill a bunch of mostly Asian women. That's a weird way that that worked out, Yasmin.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's something that we see time and time again whenever these issues come up, is the people who are perpetuating the racism towards different groups are the same people to say that's not what's happening here. Whereas the victims are the ones who are saying, yeah, you don't get my life, you don't get my reality, you don't get what I'm dealing with, and you're not trying to, and you don't want to because it doesn't benefit you to do so. So when you have a man who clearly sympathizes with this white supremacist shooter, there's no credibility there. Who cares what that guy has to say? He's the same as that guy. Get somebody else. Why is that such an issue? Or why is that so controversial just to acknowledge?
Yeah, well, and to get rid of him, that might well happen. We'll have to see. Actually, we have a poll to that effect. We wanted to ask the audience. It's a poll available at tyt.com/poll/racist sheriff. It says, will the Georgia sheriff spokesperson lose his job over racist social media posts? So I'm very curious what you think. I mean, it might seem, well, like this is so obvious that they've got to do something, but remember, it's still cops. So who knows if there will be any accountability. In any event, after he was asked about by BuzzFeed News, asked about that post, the public Facebook post became unavailable, which isn't exactly like admitting that he did it, but it's pretty close. And by the way, buddy, they've already got it. What's the thought process when taking that down? They probably didn't think to take a screenshot yet. I think I can get out in front of this thing. Not so much, not so much. Anyway, you know, I wanted to give you, Yasmin, a chance since you weren't on the show yesterday. If you wanted to respond at all to what happened, or I mean, you sort of referenced some of the ridiculous cover for the white supremacists. We're gonna have a bit more on that yesterday, but I did want your general thoughts if you wanted to provide any.
It's loaded, you know. It reminds me of a conversation that I had with a friend of mine, and he is just for context, he's a conservative white male. He has a good job, you know, all these things. And politics for him was always just like a fun thing that he could discuss with me because he knew that he and I had very differing opinions on it. And one day we went out to lunch, and it was the weekend of the Charlottesville riot, everything that was going on in Charlottesville, so a couple of years ago. And I was very distressed about everything I was seeing in the news, and it hurt, you know, at a core level, it hurt to see what was happening. And my friend at lunch, he just casually brought it up. He's like, hey, what's going on in Charlottesville? You know, not really understanding that I would have a different view or opinion on it, you know? And then he tried to throw out one of those lines like, oh, well, don't you think there's like racism against white people? And I was like, where do you even start to address these issues? And I was like, well, if white people are looking for sympathy from all these other groups that they've demonized throughout history over the course of time, every minority group has experienced this kind of discrimination and racism and attacks against them because of white supremacy, right? So if you're trying to make that argument, who are you looking for sympathy from? You know, the black people that you enslaved, or the brown people that you called terrorists, or the Mexicans that you called rapists, or now the Asian Americans who you're blaming a pandemic on, and you've previously put them in internment camps just because they look kind of Japanese, you know? So it's the same thing over and over again. It's very distressing to see. It's very distressing, even more so, I think, to see that the narrative doesn't change. They just keep repeating it. Rinse, wash, whatever the idiom is, you know? So it's the same thing over and over again. Nothing changes. And we've been dealing with this. I'm 32 years old. My whole life, I've been seeing this pattern play out, you know? And every time it's, oh, we'll talk about it later. 32 years later, we still haven't talked about it. We haven't addressed it. And the people who are perpetuating the racism are not being held accountable for it. They're almost not even being expected to be held accountable for it. And then the onus is on the victims to kind of assert that this even is a problem and get the perpetrators to acknowledge it and like look at us like we're people, you know? It's very sad to see. It also was very predictable. We saw it coming a mile away whenever Trump refused to call it the coronavirus. He called it the China virus. He did that very deliberately. He knew what he was doing. We all knew what the effect was going to be. And now we're seeing it play out and it's very sad.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of, you know, I can't speak for the individual friend that you have, but that impulse to be like, well, isn't there racism against white men too? You know, on its face, that's obviously incredibly frustrating and a big waste of time. But it's not even an honest question. Like the question is phrased as if it's a regular what about, which is okay, so you've raised something, but I want to raise something too. But that's not even normally what it is. There's a what percentage of the people who say that in the end don't believe that other kinds of racism exist at all? Like they say you can be racist against white people, but they don't think that you can be racist against black people or brown people or anyone. So anyway, that's incredibly frustrating. And you know, sort of to your point, we could see it coming a mile away. Every element about this, the violence, and then basically every wrinkle in the conversation that will take place about it. And in just a few minutes, we're actually going to turn to some of those wrinkles, unfortunately.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Yesterday in the show, I predicted that despite the fact that nationally we were all acknowledging what a horrific tragedy, the murder of so many, especially targeted Asian women in and around Atlanta, that we're all acknowledging that, but that's not gonna stop Tucker Carlson and Fox News from using this for their own ends. And I predicted that he would get on the air that night and claim that anti-Asian racism doesn't exist, despite the obvious evidence still in the headlines at that point. And let's keep it real, it wasn't that difficult of a prediction to make. So here is what Tucker Carlson had to say about those attacks. Here is the thing about that that really bothered Tucker Carlson.
So the guy's accused of murdering 8 people and all the questions were about race, okay. But notice, it's the politicians who jump in immediately to divide the country along racial lines. Vivek Ramaswamy has thought a lot about this. He's the author of the book Woke Inc. and he joins us tonight. Vivek, thanks so much for coming on. So you've been hearing this, this is such a sad story, a horrible story, but it's part of a much bigger story we've been told for the past couple of weeks, that these very real attacks against Asian Americans are somehow a product of white supremacy. I don't think there's any evidence whatsoever to support that. In fact, I think it's kind of the opposite of the truth. Why do they keep telling us that?
Okay. You had Tucker Carlson there, Yasmin, who said, oh my God, how could they possibly talk about race here when not only is there no evidence, but Tucker said it's the exact opposite of that, which takes a bit of thinking to work out. So some people are saying white supremacy contributed to the shootings. He's saying the exact opposite is true. So I assume white supremacy actually made them less likely. I don't know. But anyway, what did you think about that? Were you surprised that, you know, in the wake of this, even before funerals have been had, he's ready to stand up and say the thing about this that's frustrating is that people imply that it's racist?
I think I'm laughing because it cut to me right when I was like trying to make sense of what his logic was. And I was like, had this puzzled look on my face because he can't do it because it's so illogical and nonsensical. And I mean, say what you will about Tucker Carlson, but he is a master of his dumb, dumb craft. You know, every time he's very predictable, you know what he's going to say and why he's going to say it. He's going to deflect immediately away from what is obviously the problem or the situation. And he's going to make it about like politics and not politicizing things, even though that's the crux of his whole show. That's what they do. They politicize things that don't need to be politicized, but they do it wrong. You know, they do it, you know, well, I guess not wrong. That's relative in this case, but they do it in a very self-serving manner. Yeah, and it's very predictable. And I think what's sad about it is how many people listen to him and think that he makes good points, you know?
I know.
Even though his own network doesn't even support that, you know? His own network says he doesn't make good points and people know not to listen to him. That's his whole thing, but he's still one of the highly rated, most highly rated shows on Fox News. And he racks up the ratings as a tongue twister. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's making
and
more money
Oliver
there.
And John Oliver even did like his whole episode on Sunday about Tucker Carlson, and that was before all of this happened, you know?
Yeah.
The guy is crazy. He's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can 100%. And it's, I think you're obligated to actually.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson's show exists to try to mainstream white supremacy. That's all it is. Yeah. That's what we have been trying to say week after week after week. And I understand a lot of people get bored with that and think, why are you focusing so much on this? Well, millions of people watch him, so it seems pretty important. But I agree that John Oliver sketch was absolutely awesome. We're going to refer to that a little bit later on with one of our other videos. But to whether the points he makes are good, that's a value judgment. So a point can be good because it's logical, or it can be good because it causes us to understand something that puts our beliefs better in line with reality. Those are some ways that a point could be good. A point could also be good if you only watch the news not to learn, but to feel better about who you are and what you think about the world. And his points are very good for that. They watch to feel comfortable, to, as I often say, to have their hair stroked lightly and to feel warm and to be wrapped in a blanket. That's what it is. So when something happens in the country that's sort of bad for them, that points out that something they believe is bad or dangerous or wrong in some sort of moral or fundamental or philosophical way, Fox has a couple of different ways they can respond to that. One, the more cowardly way, is to just not admit that it's happening at all. So when the 6th was happening, they largely didn't show it. When Trump's impeachment trial was happening, they just didn't show it. They pretended that it didn't happen. So if you're a conservative, you can watch that and feel comfortable. You don't have to deal with those harsh truths. This is, I guess, a little bit less cowardly, but far more dishonest, where this is an opportunity for America to realize that we are a fundamentally racist society, and that racism combined with the easy access, the not even delayed access to guns, is a terrible idea. That is an opportunity to learn. Conservatives don't want to learn that, so instead they watch Tucker Carlson. And what do they take away from the segment you just saw? That racism is a problem, that Asian Americans are continuing to be victimized, part of a centuries-long tradition in this country? No, it's that politicians are racist by referencing racism. White liberal politicians, or perhaps members of the squad that bring up racism, are the true racists. And they finish that show and they feel very comfortable. They didn't have to learn anything. None of their predispositions were challenged in any way. So I think in that way, they're pretty good points.
It's almost audacious of them to even take a stance on race issues in the United States when they have such a homogenous, not only the people who work at Fox News are homogenous, but their audience is also so homogenous. So it's very easy to preach to a choir when nobody even knows what's going on. You know, you don't have dissenting voices. And I'm very aware of the irony that they had a brown person on to comment on this, but there's always going to be those, you know. And but it, especially on the right, they like to cherry pick those few. Let's call them Uncle Toms for lack of a better term, but they like to cherry pick those few and be like, look, here's a brown person who thinks racism isn't a thing. And it's like, well, it definitely is. But even in your own world, you can still find a bubble to live comfortably within, you know? And I remember when I was dating, there was like a lot of people would be like, oh, would you ever date somebody who's like not into politics? And it's like, well, you know, Yeah, sure, because it's, you know, you don't have to be as into it as I am. But then later it was like, what does that even mean? You know, politics is life, you know, it's all these things. And then Tucker Carlson, people like him like to say, oh, you can't politicize these things, but it is politics, it's life, you know, and there's legislation that's made because of these things. And, you know, this whole thing with Asian Americans, this most recent wave of it was brought down directly from the president himself. So it's all politics.
Yeah. And parroted by Fox hosts who loved all of that China virus, all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you're 100% right. Okay, well, heads up to the director, we're not going to play the next video. I think we've already proven that point. We're going to move on to the next Tucker Carlson one, if we could get ready for that. As Yasmin actually referenced, the last episode of John Oliver was a breakdown of Tucker Carlson, who he is, what he's designed to do, and why he knows that it'll work. There's some great archival footage from early on in Tucker Carlson's career that you should definitely take a look at. But it's interesting that in that breakdown of the fundamental focus of Tucker Carlson's show on mainstreaming white nationalism, immediately following it, just days later, Tucker Carlson does some of his most explicitly white nationalist segments, supporting white supremacy as sort of the foundation for the way people should view politics. I want to show you a segment that he did, a part of it, on immigration. Here's what he had to say.
Unlike other disasters, mass illegal immigration is permanent. No one ever really gets sent home. Over the past 30 years, the population of the United States has exploded by nearly 100 million people, mostly due to immigration. Were you even aware that that happened? You're not supposed to say a word about it. As every year the United States gets steadily more jammed with people and at the same time more chaotic and less cohesive. As the open spaces shrink, as nature itself recedes in the face of yet another strip mall or apartment complex or fast food outlet to serve the new people. This is becoming a crowded country, and crowded countries are ugly, unhappy countries. Why are we letting that happen?
Okay, so you might recall that like a year ago, he got in trouble and lost a bunch of sponsors for saying that immigrants make the country dirty. Has he learned anything from that experience? He apparently learned that he can maintain a show. And so that is, I mean, how different is saying it makes our country ugly to have more immigrants in it? Is that better, worse than dirty? I don't know. I'd say that they're probably in the same ballpark, Yasmin. But anyway, yeah, I don't know if you've noticed, Yasmin, but you can barely walk down the street now because of all the illegal immigrants. It's so crowded up in here. It's one of those good points we were talking about for Tucker Carlson.
It just makes no sense. It's such a weird correlation that he's trying to make. You know, it's like a straw man argument where you take one thing that has nothing to do with anything else and then you just conflate them together and hope that people in their own minds fill in all the blanks, right? And it's so funny that he said that because I was literally having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, and he works he's on the city council for a neighboring city here in Houston. And I was talking about all the strip malls and all these, you know, fast food restaurants that are popping up in our suburbs. And it's not because of immigrants, it's because of bad city planning and things like that. And because of greed and corporatization and all these things, it's not the immigrants that are making your towns ugly, it's Americans that are making your towns ugly. You know, you want to talk about the crowding, we got a lot of space here in the United States. Like, that's not an issue, you know? Sure, we like to, you know, congregate in certain areas, but it's such a weird argument to make. Like, it's not a point that's going to fly or that shouldn't fly. But unfortunately, people will see it and be like, oh, yeah, strip centers, it's the immigrants, you know?
Well, he's trying to make this argument that is so not self-evident that he even acknowledged it in saying, the country has been filled up with immigrants. Have you noticed that? Well, so have they?
No.
Presumably not. And if not, then I don't think it's that big of a problem. You're implying that, well, obviously it's just, we're just full to, I can't move up in here and all these buildings, as if like they just check the border, more people come across, get started on another Panera. That's not how it works. And what a weird, has he ever before said that there's too many buildings in America? What a random way to get around to, let's not have any immigrants. We're full up in here. Who thinks that? Who thinks America is crowded? You know who doesn't think that? Tucker Carlson, because as many people have pointed out, literally a week ago, getting close to 2 weeks, he made the case that we should be terrified for a different reason. Right now, it's immigration and how we're just so full, it's just a pile of people. But 2 weeks ago, it was that low sperm counts will make it impossible to continue the human race. That's what he talked about. The chemicals in our water are destroying our sperm, so we can't have kids, so we're gonna run out of people. Wait, sorry, no, now it's gotta be about immigrants. There's too many people, there's no room to move in here. Now, really fast, that might seem, well, let's show a little bit of this, because it's pretty funny actually, and then we'll comment. But here's a bit about the sperm counts.
We spent the last year hearing about a health crisis, a pandemic, but there are a lot of health crises. This may be the biggest one. Falling testosterone levels, which have completely reshaped our society, and falling sperm counts, which may make it impossible to continue the human race.
There's gonna be no baby bump coming out of this pandemic. There's something that I'm dealing with that my grandfather didn't deal with, that hunter-gatherers don't deal with, and it's not the chemicals in the environment, Tucker, it's lockdowns. Lockdowns drive down sperm count.
Lockdowns just cause every problem. I love the guy that this guy, Mark Siegel, is like, he's just sitting around. He's like, this lockdown's too long. Oh, my semen sucks now. How are you? How do you know that? That's such a weird, weird thing to say, Yasmin. But anyway, what do you think about this?
There's so much there. I don't know what to do with any of what any of those people just said. It's lockdowns, I would imagine, are better for babies. You know, everyone's sitting at home in a house. You know, what else is there to do, right? So a lot of pandemic babies, I would imagine, are coming out. There's a lot of other reasons why millennials are not choosing to have children, deliberately don't want to have children. And we can talk about those issues on Fox News, but instead they blame it on a lockdown, which makes no sense. And then Tucker Carlson, he also says things like, yeah, well, it's because of low testosterone that's causing all kinds of problems in our country, right? And he says it like it's a fact. It's nonsense. It's not a fact. You can't prove that, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's weird too, because there probably is an actual story, an actual issue in what he's actually saying. You know, like, if you want to talk about the water supply, then talk about that, you know, but instead he chooses this weirdo angle about sperm and testosterone and blames it on lockdown. It's very strange. Yeah.
Well, look, he's not an expert on everything, but you do have to give it, him this. I mean, he is basically a person that has been carved out of congealed testosterone. He knows about testosterone.
He's very masculine.
Yes. He's very, very masculine, super masculine. Anyway, yeah, look, it might seem as if he is being hypocritical there, because 1 week he talks about how there's too many people. 2 weeks ago he said, we're literally not gonna have humans anymore. That might seem hypocritical, but hypocrisy is about having different stances on the same thing based on time. And that's not actually what's happening here. We love pointing out hypocrisy. He's not really being hypocritical here, because there is actually a difference between the two things that he's talking about. It's a question of babies, but fundamentally it's a question of what kind of babies, whose babies, what color of babies, because that is the difference here. The issue with the immigrants to him is that there's too many brown babies. The problem with the sperm count is white people aren't having enough babies. It's not actually inconsistent, and I think his audience knows exactly what he's talking about there. He wants more babies, but make them white, please. That's why we named the stream that. That's what he wants. And this is why this is such an amazing confirmation of everything that John Oliver had said, that fundamentally, he may talk about a lot of things and they might seem sort of random, that, you know, he's talking about the border, he's talking about sperm counts. All of it at the end of the day comes back to white supremacy. The idea that fundamentally our nation is better when it's whiter, and it gets worse. And one day he might say dirtier, another day he might literally say uglier, like he did last night, when you bring in immigrants. That is what his show is. It is to confirm every day to his audience that the country is better, it's more cohesive when it's whiter, all of that. That's all the show is there for.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not the first time this has come up either. I mean, well, even very recently with the Meghan Markle interview with Oprah, you know, they were talking about the color of that baby. And then, you know, this also kind of reminds me of the time when Trump was like, oh, we don't want immigrants from Mexico. We want immigrants from Norway. Those are the nice ones. We definitely don't want any immigrants from Africa or the Middle East, but Norway we'll consider. We'll take Norwegians. And You know, it's very, also there's a stereotype that, you know, brown people just have a ton of babies all the time and white people don't, which is kind of true. You know, like my family is huge. I have like 50 cousins or something like that, first cousins alone, you know, but it's just such a weird problem to focus on also, because the issues are not that. There are issues there with procreation and with population control and, you know, all these different things that we could talk about, but they don't, you know, there are real issues that could be fixed or should be fixed, and they choose to deflect away from it.
Yesterday on the show, we gave Donald Trump, of all people, credit for saying something, and that something was this.
Mr. President, I know that you received the vaccine. Mrs. Trump also got the vaccine. Would you recommend to our audience that they get the vaccine then?
I would. I would recommend it. And I would recommend it to a lot of people that don't want to get it. And a lot of those people voted for me, frankly. But, you know, again, we have our freedoms and we have to live by that. And I agree with that also. But
okay, so I understand it's not a very high bar, but you should all take the vaccine so that you won't get spread and die from COVID. I didn't expect it, and he said it. So we've got some updates on this, but Yasmin, what do you think about the fact that the president actually told people that they should take this vaccine?
I think the last 4 years under the Trump presidency has gotten me to the point that even whenever he seems to do something good, I'm like, why did he do it though? What is he actually getting at? And in this case, I don't know what it is. Maybe it'll come to light in a little bit. But I mean, it came out that he did get the vaccine. The first lady got the vaccine. Rupert Murdoch got the vaccine, you know, while also saying, don't get it. It's fine. The virus isn't a thing. All of a sudden now in Fox News, the virus is a problem, by the way. And it's Joe Biden's problem and it's Joe Biden's fault. So I guess it's easy for Trump now to come out and say, get the vaccine because maybe he thinks it's being contrarian. I don't really know. I don't know what his deal is.
I think everything you said there makes sense. And that could be one way that it could go. I don't think it's really going that way. Now, look, to be fair, what they say about the vaccine and COVID is very context dependent. So on a regular day, COVID doesn't matter, reopen the schools, everybody start coughing in each other's eyes. Now, when there's people or there's immigrants coming over the border, they're bringing COVID and it's the worst thing ever, even though it's not something that you should worry about. So that really does depend. I would say in terms of the vaccine specifically, they get that their audience doesn't want to take it. I mean, they convince their audience that they shouldn't put a piece of cloth over your face. You think that they're going to put something in their blood? And I think they're all in on that, which is why, despite the fact that Trump, who wants some personal credit for the vaccine, he said to get it. In the 36 hours following that endorsement, Fox devoted only about 6.5 minutes to the remarks. Only a handful of programs even covered them at all. Flagship straight news broadcast, Special Report, and popular opinion shows like The Five and Tucker Carlson and Ingram didn't reference his comments at all. And why should they? Ingram and Carlson tell people to be incredibly suspicious of the vaccine. So even when Trump does something responsible, something he clearly thinks will provide him credit for what he did as president, they're suspiciously quiet about it. And sure, they did 6 minutes, but I want to put this in context. When they want to focus on something, what does that look like? Well, 6.5 minutes for Trump's remarks about vaccinations, 1 hour and 20 minutes about Biden talking about Neanderthals and saying that reopening prematurely is dangerous. They did a lot of coverage on that. In fact, Sean Hannity was the only Fox primetime host who actually mentioned the comments, even though he didn't play the clip. When they want to play a clip, they'll play a clip. They didn't play that one. But then he did say that despite the fact that he's gonna get it, he did it in the context of criticizing mainstream media for chastising Republicans for not wanting to get vaccinated. So again, even when there finally one of them mentioned it, because Sean Hannity really wants Trump to get credit, it was in the context of, but isn't it mean that they imply that you should get it? Isn't it wrong that they want you to get the vaccine? Isn't it patriotic to freely open yourself up to a fatal disease?
Yeah. I'm optimistically hopeful, maybe naively so, that maybe we're witnessing the downfall of Fox News, right? Because they put so much emphasis on Trump, you know, and everything he was saying. They covered it to death while he was in office and even before he was in office. And everything they did was based on Trump and what Trump said and what Trump did and what Trump believed, whether or not he had a reason to believe any of the things he believed. And now, whenever Trump is switching the narrative, he also sued like the RNC. Now, what does what does Fox News do? You know, they kind of have to keep on with the shtick because they can't just about face 180 all of a sudden, because they would lose credibility, which is funny to me. But it'll be interesting to see how this plays out on Fox News in the, you know, the coming over the Biden administration, really. And especially with elections on from the GOP, to see how that kind of goes.
It's true. It's they have a difficult tightrope to walk, that they are going to want to criticize Biden. But how much can you criticize him about a pandemic that you want to pretend doesn't matter? They'll do it a bit. They have. It's difficult, but their audience is sort of single-minded and wanting to think that Trump is good and Biden is bad. But that does make it a little bit more complicated. Now, to the general point, will conservatives take the vaccine? Well, we here hope that with Trump getting it and Trump telling them to take it, that maybe that will have an effect. We'll wait and see if the polls change at all. So far, like exactly half of Republican men have no interest in getting it. We have some early evidence. This is coming from the very stereotypical and uniquely American political theater sort of thing of going to diners to talk to people. So CNN asked one diner what their level of interest in the vaccine was.
I'm just not going to take it.
What if President Trump came out and was very robust and said, take the vaccine? I took it, even though I didn't tell anybody about it. It was kind of done secretly, but I think you should take it. He said it a little bit, but he hasn't been robust about it. If he was robust and said, take it, would you?
No.
Trump's a liberal New Yorker. Why would we listen to him either?
Did you vote for him?
He was the best option.
Okay, so look, maybe that guy isn't a hardcore Trumper. I don't know. I love the idea that he seems like he might have been. Anyway, I love the idea that, like, it's like he's our God. I worship him. Wait, in my bloodstream, you liberal New Yorker, go back to your tower. That was the line, I guess.
It feels like all the Trump supporters are going through a major identity crisis now that he's not in office, because they put so much of their identity behind backing this crazy person, you know? And now they don't know what to do. Now they're individual free thinkers who, even if Trump says don't get the vaccine, they're like, oh no, well, I don't believe in that. That's my own personal belief. That didn't come from anywhere. I've done the research. I'm a scientist, you know? So it's, I mean, whatever. You know, at this point, I'm just worried about getting me, my family, my loved ones vaccinated. So maybe we can go out into the world and not have to worry about it. And for the rest of everyone, like, there's always so much we can do to help people and to, you know, get everybody back to whatever normal even is anymore. I can't remember what normalcy is. I think this is it. Maybe this is it. Yeah.
No, me being alone in this building is weirdly normal now. Look, I agree. You know, we can only do what we can try to do. We spent this whole last year trying to get people exactly like the people in that diner to wear masks and socially distance. And those people made it through, luckily. But there's other people who aren't in diners right now because they didn't make it to the other side of the pandemic, that might have if they had listened to us rather than people like Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, or Donald Trump. In general. But it is interesting where they draw the line. I remember one time we showed footage at a Trump rally where they were asking people in the crowd, if Trump tells you to put on a mask, will you? And they were like, no, we won't do that. Like, they love Trump, they worship Trump, but this sort of like feigned idea of being a patriotic American that they've tied in with exposing yourself to a virus, that is apparently more core to their identity now than even loving Trump. And by the way, we showed that video of them talking to a couple people. I want to sort of zoom out. Here's the whole diner now.
Does anybody in this restaurant think it's a good idea to take the vaccine?
No.
Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Anyone here, is a good idea to take the vaccine? Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Not one person here thinks it's a good idea? Complete quiet.
Okay, I'm very glad that that reporter was not killed, because a diner that's filled up with people who have no interest whatsoever is probably a diner that doesn't have the best general impression of the press. But it was a good question. And yeah, Yasmin, not a single one of them have any interest whatsoever. They just stared back at him. And there's, you can watch the extended questions. Why aren't you interested? They went and talked to a bunch of people, and the reasons were, I'm suspicious. That's it. And when he would point out, you know, all the different studies and all of that, they would just say, that's my choice. Like, they don't have, nor do they require anything grounded. In fact, more so than, they gave me reason to be nervous. I don't know, something Bill Gates, I don't know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's something that we see a lot of in politics, especially in political commentary, right? Is fear of the unknown and fearing those things that you are unaware of, things that you don't even know you're supposed to be aware of, because it's like what you were saying earlier, it's uncomfortable to address those things. You know, it's a lot of work. If I was going to sit down and research how vaccines actually work and, you know, what the side effects, that would be like a day's worth of research at least, just for me to like wrap my head around it, you know? So it is a lot of work. It is, and it's scary sometimes, because everyone is afraid of what they don't know. Everyone's afraid of what could be out there. That's why we watch horror movies, because we never know when the scare is coming, you know? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it has real life applications like this, where we all need everyone to kind of cooperate. And then there's people who are saying, I'm too scared to even look at that thing or even to think about it. And that's what we're seeing. I was also laughing because it was kind of ridiculous to see like a CNN reporter just yelling at a diner full of people like, who wants the vaccine, you know? And it's like, if I was a diner, even if I was like pro-vaxxer and all that stuff, I'd just be like, why are you here? Just, can you go? Like, I'm just eating. So that's why I was laughing.
Well, the Democrats won. And so the media has to spend a lot of time trying to understand conservatives. But anyway, the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope, though, is you can scream to a diner, is anyone gonna take it? But I don't 100% trust the responses there, because they were public, they weren't private. And the thing is, almost all of those people, if you ask them individually why they don't wanna take it, they will talk about choice and they will talk about freedom, that it's their body, it's their choice. Women's reproductive health is not applicable. But anyway, they can choose whatever they want. But is that what they actually believe, that it is just up to each individual? And when I ask that, I mean, if one person in that diner had raised their hand, how would they have responded? Would they have thought, yep, it's Joe's choice too. It's my choice not to, their choice to take it. So you think that's how they would have responded? You know, when you're the one person in a crowd at a Trump rally with a mask, do they act as if it's just your choice and people can just disagree freely? Is that how they act? No, there is a huge amount of social pressure to expose yourself in the same way that they have. And if you said that you weren't gonna have the virus or the vaccine, they would definitely call you a sheep, attack you, yell at you. Like, look at all the videos of anti-maskers getting in people's faces and telling them to take their masks off. Those people are not as committed to the concept of choice as they might want you to believe when their emotions aren't all riled up.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, and not just telling them, but ripping masks off of people's faces. Yeah. You know, like, people get violent, people get scary. Like, I don't think that if I was in a crowd, in that crowd, I would necessarily be like, yeah, me, I like vaccines, you know? Because at that point, it's just like a public safety issue, you know? Mm-hmm. People are scary.
Yeah. So anyway, all that to say that maybe there will be a person or two in that diner that wouldn't admit that they got it, but maybe doesn't want to kill their relatives. And that's what I hope at this point. But anyway, we'll see if Trump comes out with more robust statements, as that CNN reporter did. I do think it would be helpful in convincing some people, probably not as many as we would hope, but anything that gets us a step closer to herd immunity, you know, and protects those who can't be vaccinated is a good thing. Yesterday, news broke that there was an apparent threat potentially to the life of Vice President Kamala Harris outside of her official residence. Now, she has not actually moved in there because repairs are being done. But in theory, you might have seen the news that a man from Texas was arrested outside of the official residence. This is yesterday, and he's now facing weapons and ammunition charges. And I wanted to give a little bit of time so we could find out a little bit more about that. We didn't talk about it live on the Young Turks yesterday, but now we know a bit more. So DC police say officers arrested and charged 31-year-old Paul Murray of San Antonio, and that a rifle and ammunition were recovered from his vehicle. A police report obtained by CNN shows officers alleged that he was in possession of an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. Totally coincidence. They always have those. 113 rounds of unregistered ammunition and 5 30-round magazines, which you clearly have for hunting deer and self-defense. A US Army spokesman confirmed to CNBC today that Murray served as an unmanned drone pilot from March of 2010 to April 2014. He held the rank of specialist and had no deployments, according to the Army. He had apparently recently purchased the AR-15. And his mother received a text from home this morning stating he was in DC and was going to take care of his problem. He had some paranoid delusions about the military and the government. So look, again, there's still a lot of information that we need to have, and we don't want to jump to any conclusions. But the fact that he was outside of that official residence, Yasmin, seems concerning, considering how much political violence there has been recently, how much sort of cover for political violence there's been from right-wing media.
It kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about fear driving people so much. And it's that fear leads to anger because they feel victimized. They feel like they've been villainized, whether or not they believe that they should have been. And then they always have a target, right? So in this case, for whatever reason, this guy's target was Kamala Harris. That was a person that he chose to blame for whatever issues he's having. And Kamala Harris is not above criticism, but she's really not the worst human being in government. Like, say what you will about her, there's a lot that can be said about her, but she's not like the one that you need to be going after if you're upset. And he's also 31 years old. So I am curious, as a millennial, what he thinks his major problems are and why he thinks Kamala Harris is the one perpetuating them. Mm-hmm. On top of that, the access is very scary. It also calls into question, well, he's never deployed, but it calls into question the training that these guys get when they go to the military and what happens to them when they come out of it. So there's a lot going on with this guy. And then the fact that he left San Antonio, which is a pretty liberal city, and then went to go find Kamala Harris is also kind of strange. People don't realize that Texas has liberal cities. So I feel like I'm always like trying to remind people that there are a lot of liberals and progressives in Texas.
There are. I lived in Austin for a number of years.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
But that is a good point. Yes. Although, I mean, in theory, you could have come from another part. Anyway, that's beside the point. It's obviously complex. We don't know. Maybe when they talk to him, maybe there will be writing or a manifesto. I don't know. Thankfully, she's perfectly fine. But this does raise concerns that have been very elevated for a couple of months now, that just because Biden and Kamala Harris got in, against both the opposition of elected Republicans as well as their violent mobs, the sort of paramilitary wing of the Republican Party, that doesn't mean that like all of those people that would have been perfectly happy to string up Biden and Mike Pence on that day afterward were like, oh, well, guess we're back to the normal, push and pull of American politics. No violence for me anymore. That's probably not actually how it's going to go. Those people are still out there. And thankfully, there are warnings from inside of the government about it. A new report from the US intelligence community warns of future unspecified violence committed by domestic extremists who've been emboldened by the siege on the US Capitol and conspiracy theories about the 2020 election and coronavirus pandemic. Biden commissioned a threat assessment shortly after taking office. And so, look, we've talked about this sort of thing before. And whenever an assessment like that comes out of the intelligence community, I understand if some people, naturally think, well, the intelligence community has been really opportunistic about the sort of threats that they've talked about in the past. That is certainly true. And they could be wrong. But this is hardly news to us. I mean, the siege of the Capitol just happened a couple of months ago. How many different plots from more recently, people who support QAnon, militia members, white supremacists have been foiled by the FBI over the past few years, with people dreaming of starting race wars or overthrowing the government. So you don't necessarily need to trust the US intelligence community to understand that this is a threat, that those people are still out there, and that they have not suddenly come to the realization that the election was legitimate and Biden and Harris deserve to be in office.
Yeah. I think this just harkens back to 2016, whenever Donald Trump was elected president, and so many minorities in this country were terrified, like legitimately terrified. White supremacists in America are, you know, the largest threat, as determined by our own intelligence committees. And it kind of reminds me, I don't want to misquote him, but a tweet that Fred T. Joseph put out, and he was saying, you know, if Black Americans were really as violent and angry and dangerous as they seem to think we are, I mean, everybody would be in a lot of trouble. And it reminded me of back in 2001, after September 11th, when Muslims were being very, very heavily criticized and villainized in the United States. People were like, oh, they're going to come over here. They're going to, you know, try to get Sharia law invoked in the United States. And I'm not going to, you know, and I was thinking, and I was, you know, not even 13 at the time, right? I think it was just like a month before my 13th birthday. And I was like, do they not know that there's already millions of Muslims here? And if like Muslims are trying to take over this country, probably would have happened by now, you know, if they were as organized as these, you know, international terrorists. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the case. You know, the things that you're afraid of are not worth fearing, you know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the things that you're saying are safe, the things that you're saying, oh, this is a person who had a bad day or whatever, they're the ones that you need to actually be afraid of, but the news won't cover it that way. And so they keep getting off and they keep seeing that they're getting off, right? So with the insurrection, everything that happened, all that the congressional response to that told them is that we can do this again, nothing will happen. And we've seen this over time, and it's gotten so bad that they went to the Capitol and again, nothing happened.
Yeah. And there's always these blinders too when talking about that. Like, they will, you know, occasionally freak out about Sharia law. They're very specific about Sharia law, because it's not religious law in general that they're against. I mean, yesterday, while the Equal Rights Amendment was being debated on the floor, Marjorie Greene was ranting about how this is like a violation of God's creation and all of that. Yeah. They would be perfectly happy to have some form of religious law put into effect. And it probably would actually in practice have quite a bit of overlap with Sharia law. But the implications make them uncomfortable. So yeah, they're always very specific in that case. Anyway, okay, we're gonna really quickly roll through to one last story. We only have a few minutes, but let's jump into this. I know I sprung that on the director with very little notice. Sorry, that's good. Anyway, in the wake of the Capitol attack, there were certainly a lot of questions about some of the footage that we saw from some police officers. But then also, there was clearly some heroism from cops who willingly were leading the rioters away, some who were attacked, brutalized, many were injured. And obviously, a death toll was left after that. And so the Congress decided they're going to pass this resolution to honor some of those police. They have this resolution that states, on January 6, 2021, a mob of insurrectionists forced its way into the US Capitol building and congressional office buildings and engaged in acts of vandalism, looting, and violently attacked Capitol police officers. The desecration of the US Capitol, which is the temple of our American democracy, and the violence targeting Congress are horrors that will forever stain our nation's history. And so, you know, it seems like the most obvious thing in the world, except the slightly more obvious thing that is going to be opposed by a number of Republicans who voted against it. A dozen of them voted against it. Andy Biggs and Thomas Massey and Andy Harris and Lance Gooden and Matt Gaetz, what a tool. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, who didn't have time yesterday to comment on the fact that a bunch of people were murdered in her state. She didn't have any time for that. She did have time to try to block a resolution to honor the cops who, look, to be fair to her, we're standing against her team on that particular day. But yeah, a dozen of them had a problem with it. And they would come up with these excuses, Yasmin, like they're not really insurrectionists, which again, you sound like you're on their side if you're picking little like points like that apart. And Matt Gaetz, I don't even want to read his quote or whatever, but you would think that that would be pretty obvious, but no, they had a problem with it.
Well, I appreciate you for not subjecting me to Matt Gaetz's tweet. Thank you. You know, whenever things like this happen, it's always funny to me the things that people choose to focus on, because in so focusing on certain things, they're actively not focusing on the really obvious things. And you have to ask again, why? Why are you doing this? And it's because, do you actually support cops or not really? Was that just a talking point, you know? And as we saw during the resurrection with the insurrectionists, you know, not the resurrection, the insurrection. During the insurrection with the insurrectionists, you know, they immediately did not respect the cops that were there, you know. And now to see it happening from congressional Republicans, it's like, oh, this is an institutionalized, agreed upon stance that you're taking as a party. And it's an interesting one considering where you came from, the, you know, for the last 4 years, what you were fighting for was justice for cops, which is interesting because they're the ones who facilitate justice in a lot of ways, you know, at least on the most tangible, real level for most Americans. You know, when we see cops, that's what we see. And, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I don't like talking about her for the same reason that, you know, the other person in the super chat mentioned. But to your point with that, you do have to talk about these things because maybe it'll get through to somebody, you know, like, you know, if you really want to stop, you know, making terrible people famous, don't click on things with their names on it, you know, just little things that you can do to upset the algorithm or whatever. But in the world of politics, and this is a thing that I struggled with during the Trump presidency, is how much attention do I give this guy? But I have to give him some because he's the president, and the things that he says, no matter how ridiculous they are consequential to lives. You know, you do have to give attention to it, and you do have to call it out for what it is, because if you don't, you're really not a whole lot better than the people who listen to it and abide by it. You know, you still have to speak out against certain things.
Yeah, and I mean, your point is a great one, and we have some recent examples of that. Like, how many times did we hear, don't focus on the thing he says, he's just saying stuff. You know, like when he says that we should slow down the testing and then they slow down the testing. Or, you know, when he says they stole the election, you should do something about it. And oh, oops, they attacked the Capitol. Like, sometimes it's worth talking about because they're listening. Whether we talk about it or not, they're listening over there. They hear what Trump says. They pay attention to what Marjorie Greene does. So we have to understand it as well. Interestingly, Jim, as some have pointed out, Jim Jordan and Lauren Boebert not voting against it. Wonder why. Anyway, okay, so that is unfortunately all the time we have, but I did want to give you the results of our poll we asked you earlier. Will the Georgia sheriff spokesperson lose his job over his racist social media posts? Let's see what those results are. Okay, and once again, it's too small for me, but that looks like, is that more than 90%? It's like 92% voting no. I really thought that that would be a little bit closer, but apparently we need to target our questions better. Yasmin, what do you think? Nobody thinks it's gonna happen, basically. 90.1% say no.
Okay, I was gonna say definitely not either. Or if he does, then he'll just be reassigned somewhere else and they'll forget the whole thing even happened. So I'm glad that nobody else, that I'm not any more pessimistic than the average Damage Report viewer. That makes me feel better about myself a little bit.
That was good news. Anyway, yes, as always, it's great to have you on. Until the next time you join us on the show, where can people see your work?
You can follow me on Instagram at YazK. That's Yaz with 5 Z's, YazZZZZK. And from there, you can get my podcast. It's called Global Thread. It's also on Spotify and wherever else you listen to podcasts. And we talk about global issues, things that you want to know a little bit more about, but you know, you don't have time to do the research. Awesome. I do it for you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, as always, thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.